Friends, I'm going to do something very embarrassing to myself to tell you of something that happened to me some time ago. Maybe some of you haven't heard about it. I was giving an address in Cleveland, and I arrived just about lecture time in the Hotel Cleveland. I did not have time for a bite to eat, so I dressed as I am now, a kind of a holy show. I told the four members of the committee that I had nothing to eat, and would they be good enough to go down to the dining room with me while I got a glass of milk and some graham crackers. So there was a waitress there taking the orders, someone in the early 30s. She took the orders of the four men, and then she looked at me, and she says, "Well, Cock Robin, what will you have?" I don't know how I'm going to tie that up with the 30th parallel. It has nothing to do with it, absolutely nothing. Now I'm getting, this is a serious moment now. I'm going to ask a serious question. Do you believe that our Western civilization is decaying? Some think it is. There was a German writer a few years ago by the name of Spengler who wrote a work called The Decline of the West. It was a very learned study in several volumes in which he showed that various civilizations go through seasons: spring, summer, autumn, winter. And he holds that our Western civilization is already in its winter, in its decline. The very learned Toynbee, in his 10 volumes of study of history, a little more optimistic. He makes a study of 21 civilizations, showed that many have decayed from the beginning of the world. And there's danger, he said, in our Western civilization, of a schism of soul, that we may rot from within. Now, I wonder if that is true. I'm going to present to you another point of view tonight, for this has given me much pause and much thought. I'm going to show that our Western Christian civilization is not on the decline. It need not be, certainly. Over 1900 years ago, here we're going back to its origin, there was a gibbet that was unfurled on the crossroads of the cultures of the world. Over the man that was on that gibbet, there was an inscription. And the inscription was in three languages. Well, I see the angel is peckable too. There were three languages: Hebrew, Latin, and Greek. The language of the good. The language of the true. in the language of the beautiful. Love was unfurled on that gibbet like a wounded eagle in the name of three cultures, three cities. Jerusalem, Rome, and Athens. Those three languages, those three cultures, though they bore the inscription of death, were also the language and the cultures of life. For this message of love spread throughout the world, in these languages and through them. Each had something to give. What they gave constituted our Western Christian civilization. What did Jerusalem understood as the Old Testament? And then as the New Testament, what did this Hebraic Christian civilization give to the world? It gave to the world the value of a person. No one else ever did that. Why did a person have value? Why, at the very beginning, man was made in the image of God himself. And then furthermore, as the story of the Old Testament unfolded, there was an encounter of a person and a person, of man and God, of God and man. So that the person of God defined himself in terms of persons. The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Three great patriots. And when finally all the promises about this encounter were realized, God became man. And then you add him affirming once more a person. He said, what doth it profit a man if he gain the world? Lose his soul. In other words, a person is worth more than the cosmos itself. And on that day, when his hands and feet were dug with steel, he spoke to a thief and addressed him in the second person singular, this day, thou shalt be with me in paradise. He calls his sheep by name, persons. Sovereign, inalienable worth. This became the contribution of this culture, this city, this background. Rome, what did that give? When love on the cross was born, it was a Roman emperor that sent out an order that everyone in the world was to be enrolled. Everyone in the world. Why? Well, Rome was the master of this whole civilization. There was only one official language. It was Latin. There was only one capital of the world, it was Rome. There was only one emperor, it was Caesar. And so Caesar Augustus, master bookkeeper of the world, seated at his desk at the Tiber, sends out an order to the world. To what? To humanity. And not a humanity that's barbarian, but a humanity that was ecumenical, was one because it was governed by that which made Rome famous, law. Law, order, justice, equity, these would be the bonds, not force, that would pull men together. Athens, what did that give? That gave science. Why did not the Eastern world have science? Why didn't science take its origins in India or China? Because the religions of the rest of the world were pantheistic, that is to say, they mixed up God and the universe. If God is in a bug, you can't step on a bug, you kill God. In order to have science, you have to be able to study nature as nature. You just can't have nature mixed up with theology. And so the Greek scientist, Thales, for example, was concerned about what are the basic elements of the universe. He found them to be four: air, earth, fire, water. Pythagoras was the great mathematician. Archimedes was interested in mechanics, machinery. But science was possible because nature could be studied without myths. Christian civilization baptized all of these. And through the modern world, and in the course of history, what do you have? And this is a proof now that Western Christian civilization is not dying. You have throughout the world the growth today of democracy. Witness, for example, social justice, racial equality, formation of many nations in Africa, the embarrassment of communistic nations that they are not respecting the value of a person. All of the democratic movements of the world have flown from the value of a person that had its origin and its font at the very beginning of the Hebraic tradition. Why do we have, for example, today an attempt to build peace through the unity of nations, through dialogue, through discussion, through the UN? Why do we have, for example, one world trying to assemble all of the peace-loving peoples together? And simply because this idea of humanity has been baptized. And we're recognizing the fact that men form themselves in society and are governed by law. This is not dying, it's very much alive. And science. They were studying nature, crudely, yes, but what has that science become? That science has become technology. Where is the technology, for example, of the world today? It's here. It's in our Western world. As Alfred North Whitehead of Harvard said, it was only in the Western world that science could ever have developed, thanks to the discipline and order of thought during the Middle Ages. Jasper says the same thing. So that what is the world today drawing on for a future hope of peace? It's drawing on the democracy, on one world, and on technology, and all of these have flown in some way from this great tradition of the three cultures that crucified love on a cross and then finally carried out the message to the world. I do not agree with Spengler. Western civilization is not dying. It's very much alive. Simply because we are a part of it. Angel, will you produce the world for me? Bring in the world, Angel, will you? Bring in the world. Marvelous what this angel does for me. See? See, there's the world. He did it. Now. We must not rest on our laurels. In Western Christian civilization, we have a terrible burden thrust upon us. And what is that burden? That burden is the realization that we have a debt to the rest of the world. There's a division in the world today which is unhealthy. I suppose the best way to show this dividing line is to take the 30th parallel. This is it. And that's why we call this the 30th parallel. You run your finger over the 30th parallel, raising it slightly above China. And what do you have? You have the wealth. You have the science. You have the hospitalization. You have the education above the 30th parallel. And for the most part, you have want, hunger, thirst, and indigence below the 30th parallel. Maybe this is why some are saying that Western civilization is on the decline, because they see this neglect. And the neglect falls principally upon us in the United States. For example, we in the United States are 6% of the population of the earth. Only 6. But we have 46% of the world's wealth. That's not fair. That's just like taking $100 and giving $9 to 6 people and then dividing all of the rest among the rest of the world, the rest of the 100. Why, we throw enough garbage into our garbage pails every week to feed China for 3 days. The Americans spend $150 a year on cigarettes and alcohol, $150 a year. That is $50 more than 2/3 of the world earns in a year. In a year. If all of the hungry people below the 30th parallel began a march and could march day and night and march over waters as well as land and begin encircling this whole globe, how many times would they go around the earth? Twenty-five times. And so I say a tremendous burden has been thrown upon our Western civilization, if it is to survive. And it will survive only on condition that it begins to divide and to give and to share with the other peoples of the world. There are, for example, between 10 and 12 million lepers in the rest of the world. Is not that a responsibility upon us? The average spending money of every teenager in the United States is $500 a year. That's $450 more than the earning capacity of 2/3 of the world. Maybe that's what Toynbee meant when he said we are beginning to decay from within. I know the mere pittance that I get to distribute here to the rest of the world doesn't help very much. Well, that's my work. But at any rate, I can see the responsibility and the duty of sharing. And that's why this telecast, incidentally, and every other telecast that you ever hear, on which I appear, goes here, goes to the rest of the world. Everything. We have to make ourselves vulnerable to feel the need that there is in the rest of the world. I visited a leper colony in Baluba a couple of years ago. I brought with me 200 little silver crucifixes about that high. I was going to give one to each leper. First leper that came out to meet me had his arm off the elbow. He held up a stump. And around his stump of his left arm was a rosary. And he put out his right hand for the cross. I looked down on the most foul, noisome, fetid mass and trench of corruption I ever saw in my life. And I held that crucifix above it, and then I dropped it. I dropped it. It was gobbled up in the leprosy. And then, all of a sudden, there were 501 lepers in that camp, and I was the worst of all. For here I had taken this symbol of love, this symbol of identification with all suffering humanity. I'd taken the symbol of him who had touched these people, and I refused to identify myself with a man who on the inside was 1,000 times cleaner than I was. And the terrible thought of what I'd done came over me, and then I pressed my hand to his, and so on. Or shall I say, the other 500 lepers in the camp. This is our vulnerability to the world.
Bishop Sheen will return in a moment.
If you asked me to call at your home, I would have to ring the doorbell before I could get in. But thanks to television, you allow me in the living room with you. That's a great pleasure. Maybe sometime you write to me, visit me. In any case, we're friends. Bye, and God love you.